Fitz, I am not a thing you can give away. We are interwoven.
I poked the fish out of the fire. With a twig, I dusted off the ash. In a less hungry time, I would have peeled back the skin to reveal the flesh and then discarded the skin. Now I scarcely waited a moment before I was juggling steaming chunks of fish to cool them before pushing them into my mouth. After the fish was gone, I went back to the water and drank. I felt better. I looked up at a clear blue sky. Even in summer, nights in the mountains were chill. I decided I should get firewood. My path out of the quarry took us past abandoned blocks of cut stone. As I headed toward the forest, Night Eyes spoke.
I like that piece.
It's not very big.
There are only two of us.
To placate him, I walked over to the chunk of rock. I saw why it had been discarded. It had been part of a larger piece that had broken along a thick silver vein. It was gleaming black and richly streaked with threads of silver, not near as large as what Verity had used. This stone was about the size of a pony cart. I set my hand on top of it. It was a very strange sensation. Raw skillstone was empty, I discovered, empty and waiting to be filled. It had an indefinable tactile sensation. I wanted to touch it. The sun had warmed it pleasantly. If I'd been a cat, I would have curled up on top of it.
You are so stubborn.
And you are not?
I was as a cub. I wanted to hate you. Do you remember how savage I was when you first saw me in the cage? Even as you were carrying me off, I was trying to bite you through the bars.
You were not much more than a cub, and you'd been treated badly. You had no reason to trust me or listen to what I told you.
True.
He'd been dirty and smelly and bone thin, riddled with parasites and full of anger. But that anger was what had drawn us together. Our parallel fury at the paths we were trapped on had linked our minds, and for those first few moments, I had not realized our minds were joined. That we had the beginning of a deep wit bond, whether we wanted it or not.
Oh, cub, I said out loud. So you called me then.
I realized what we had done. The fused memory had poured from us into the stone. I could feel it under my hand, and I knew exactly what I would find when I moved my hand. There was a patch of fur on the back of Night Eye's neck, where the black guard hairs had a sort of gentle swirl on top of his thick grey and black fur. I had a sensory memory of how it had felt to put my hand on him there. Often, I'd put my hand on his back as we walked side by side, or as we sat on the cliff's edge looking out over the sea. It had been the natural place for my hand to fall, the touch that had renewed our bond like a repeated vow. It felt good to feel that again. Lifting my hand was an act of will, and there it was on the stone. It was not hair and fur and a warm breathing animal beneath it, but it was exactly the size and the shape of my hand, and where my palm had touched, I could see each individual guard hair. I drew a deep breath. Not yet. No. I walked away. Night Eyes was silent within me. I had to pass our old campsite.
Ketrickan had been so young, the fool and I of an age, and yet not.
Old Kettle with her wise old eyes in their nests of wrinkles and her deep-kept secrets. And Starling. Starling, who could annoy me like a humming gnat. I looked around at the view. The trees were taller. Underfoot, on the stone, only sodden and rotted bits of fabric and line. I kicked at it and turned up a layer that had kept its color. That blue had been Ketrickan's cloak. I stooped and touched it. My queen, I thought to myself, and smiled. I nudged the rotting cloth. Beneath it, the pitted and corroded head of our old hatchet was scarcely recognizable. I stood and walked on. Beyond it was the place where Verity had carved his dragon. Chips and shards still littered the empty area where his dragon had crouched. He had used a chisel with a rock for a hammer at first, until he had plunged his hands into raw skill and carved and shaped with them. My king. Had he truly told me it was time to carve my dragon? Told me it was time to surrender B to someone else's care? Time to surrender my man's body for one of stone and skill? No. Tomorrow, with the dawn, I would be up and fishing. I would catch a dozen and eat them all. Then I would catch still more and smoke them, and the next morning I would begin my walk to the abandoned market pavilion. I wondered if winter had killed the old bear, or if he would trouble me.
We will die before you get there. Fitz, I know these things. Why won't you listen to me?
I can't. And that was the truth. I could not let go of the hope that I could go home to be. Worms were not so terrible an affliction. Burrick had known half a dozen cures for them. The healers in Buckkeep grew all the herbs in the women's garden. Once I reached home, I would rest and grow strong again. B and I would be together. We'd leave the court and all its rules. We would travel by horseback. We'd go from keep to keep, as if we were traveling minstrels, and she would learn the history and geography of the six duchies by seeing them. The fool would go with us and purr. We would live simply and move easily, and we would be happy.
I won't watch you die.
I don't intend to die.
Does anyone?
I gathered an armload of firewood. There were plenty of fallen branches. I had no way to cut the larger one. I smiled as I recalled how Verity had returned an edge to his sword before giving it to me. I went back for the corroded hatchet head. I handled it, remembering it, and then pushed the rust and corrosion away. I slid the blade between my thumb and forefinger, imagining a fresh edge. Fitting a haft to it took longer, but with it I chopped a good supply of thicker branches, took an armful, and carried it back to my fire. I could smell the fish I had cooked, and wished there were more of it. I added a stick or two of wood to my fire, and sat down beside it. I jolted awake in the dead of night. I was lying on cold stone, and my fire was nearly dead. I built it up again. I was glad I had enough wood to get through the night, for I had no desire to go blundering through the dark to find the chopped supply I'd left behind. I waited for the wolf to rebuke me for my stupidity and laziness. He didn't. It took some time for me to realize he was gone. Just gone. I was alone. Chapter 47. A Wolf's Heart. Revel, if you would, please ride into Oaksby Water today. Marley, the leather worker, sent word that my order is ready. I trust you to judge its quality and accept it or ask her to redo the work. Be sure to see that the pages are well bound to the cover, and that the paper is of a good quality, and that the embossing on the cover is cleanly impressed. Please deliver it only to me if you find it worth the coin we spent. It is a gift for Mistress B, and I wish to surprise her with it myself. Among Revel's papers at Withywoods. I continued to see Thick every night, although it made me very stupid and dull during the days. I did not care that I was chided for not knowing my Chalcedian verbs, and that I had to pick out all my embroidery stitches for making the daisies green. Every night, I went to my bed and slept a short time before his music would gently wake me. I would hurry down the hall in my nightrobe for the best hours of my life. I wanted to give him something. Anything. The bright kerchiefs I had bought for Revel were still in my wardrobe. It took a long time for me to decide that I could give them to Thick, but even those were not enough to express what I felt for the kindly old man. I had ink and brushes for my dream journal. With great care, I sliced a page from it and drew Smokey, dancing after the spool. I colored him, his green eyes and black pupils, his grey fur and tiny white claws. Thick was delighted with my gifts. He promised he could keep them secret. I returned to my room and crawled into my bed, tired and happy. I woke when Spark sat down on the foot of my bed.
"Bee, wake up!"
she ordered me.
"What? It's you! Where have you been? I've missed you!"
"Shh!" She tilted her head toward the adjoining chamber where Caution snored on.
"I'm here at Bookkeep Castle. I'm busy with many things. When we returned, Lady Nettle took me aside. Lord Riddle had endorsed me. I watch over you. I keep you safe."
Because I ran away on Pris that day. I felt a surge of unhappiness. What a foolish thing I had done. My sister did not trust me now. I didn't deserve her trust. Spark shook her head.
"From the first day we returned. Years ago, your sister Nettle was a stranger at Bookkeep Castle when she was little more than a girl. She feared that there would be people who would take advantage of you. Riddle agreed, so I watch over you, and every few days I report back to them."
"How is it I don't see you then?"
"Oh."
My eyes roved the walls of my bedchamber, seeing a spy hole I was certain would be there. She smiled.
"I am better able to watch over you if I am not seen. I was taught ways of moving about Bookkeep unseen. Some day, perhaps, I will show you."
"Why are you here now?"
"To let you know that Thick cannot keep a secret. He will show off his kerchiefs. He wore two of them to bed, and he will eventually show Smokey's portrait to someone. He is too pleased with it to keep it to himself. The work is unmistakably yours. No one draws as you do, let alone paints in such detail."
"Will Nettle say I cannot be friends with Thick anymore?"
She shrugged.
Her hair, shortened by a mourning cut, had a strand of spiderweb on it. I reached up and took it out for her.
"Nettle will decide, but they will know, because I must report it back to them tomorrow.
Will you tell them you warned me?"
She took a huge breath and let it pour out of her. "Will you tell them I warned you?"
"No, absolutely not."
"I am a terrible spy," she admitted. I watched her slip out of the door and smiled.
I did not sleep at all. In the morning, I begged Caution to let me breakfast in my room so that I could put off the dreaded business of dressing and hair fussing. She worried that I was ill and conceded. I ate and then submitted to being groomed and decorated with clothing and having my short hair brushed and pinned up as best she could before I went off for my session as a lady to Queen Eliania. Her belly now stuck out like the prow of a ship, and all the talk was of the baby to come, and all our sewing for the baby. Then I had my lessons in languages and history. I went to my midday meal full of dread for what must come. I sat on the dais with the other nobility and ate with them, and at the close of the meal, Riddle invited me to ride out with Nettle and him that afternoon. His eyes were kind, his mouth reserved. I accepted with formal courtesy, and then was trooped back to my room by Lady Simmer. Caution had set out appropriate clothing. My riding garments were green and yellow, withywood colours. It made me consider how I fit into the Farseer hierarchy. I descended, resigned to a gaggle of folk to accompany us. But not even the nurse and the baby were there, and Riddle dismissed all the grooms, even Purr, who had been loitering hopefully nearby. Riddle tossed me up onto my horse without ceremony, and Nettle mounted hers without anyone so much as touching her elbow. We left at a sedate walk that turned into a canter as soon as we were out of the gates of Buckkeep. We did not speak as we rode, but gave the horses a good gallop on a trail through a forest that led to a secluded glen near a stream. Here we dismounted and let the horses water, and Nettle said,
"I know that you visit Thick every night. You must know it is not appropriate to be running about the keep in your nightgown."
I bowed my head and tried to look startled.
"Well?"
she demanded.
"He is my friend. He is teaching me to make skill music. We play with his cat. He has nice things to eat. That is all."
"And you have learned to erect such skill walls that I can barely find you during the day."
I kept my eyes on the grassy sward.
It is to keep the music in. He says we must not make the music too loud, for then the apprentices cannot sleep well.
Will you lower your walls and let me hear the music you have learned?
It was a test. Did I trust her enough to lower my walls so that she might see the truth of what I had told her? If I refused...
No, there was no refusing this. I dropped my walls. I felt her mind touch mine. I began the purring cat music.
Wolffather slammed into my awareness with such force that I sat down flat on the grass.
We must get to the Queen. Queen Eliania knows of you?
I felt dazed, as if the air had been knocked out of me. I could hear Nettle exclaiming, and Riddle suddenly knelt beside me, but I knew the wolf was more important.
How are you here when my father is dead?
I asked him.
What did she say?
Nettle asked Riddle in alarm.
He isn't dead. Not yet. And I need to get to the Queen, the one who hunted with me. Queen Ketrickan. I wish to bid her farewell.
Farewell?
Yes.
I felt him hide something from me. Wolffather was very like my other father.
Very well. I will do my best.
I looked up at Riddle and Nettle. There was no simple way to explain it. I would not even try. I am not ill. Night Eyes has come to me. I must see Queen Ketrickan right away. My father is not dead. Night Eyes wishes to bid her farewell. The next words came out strangled. I think they are dying somewhere. Riddle crouched before me. He put his hands on my shoulders.
Explain. From the beginning.
I could feel the wolf's clawing panic. I tried. Sometimes, when my father could not be with me, Wolffather would come, into my mind. Night Eyes. I know you know who he was. He was wit-bonded to my father, and after he died, he lived inside my father. I looked from one concerned face to the other. Surely they must have known this. They were looking at me as if I were mad. When I was taken, Wolffather went with me. He tried to help me, to warn me, or give me ideas of what to do. But sometimes, if my walls were too tight, he could not speak to me. When I saw my father, Night Eyes went back to him. And just now, when I dropped my walls for Nettle, he came to me again, and he says he must see Lady Ketrickan, because my father is dying. I shook my head and demanded aloud of Night Eyes, "How can my father be dying when Beloved said he was dead? Why would he lie to me? Why would he leave my father alone and dying?"
"He didn't die, B, but alone he will not last much longer. He believes he can rest and be well enough to come home. I know he cannot. He must stay there. It is time for us to carve our dragon."
"B!"
"What?"
"B, answer me. Are you witted?" Nettle demanded.
"No, I don't think so."
I hesitated. It seemed such a random question as I strove to understand what Night Eyes had told me. "I don't know. Cats talk to me, but they talk to everyone or anyone who will listen. But this is not the wit. I don't think it's the wit. He is my wolf father. Please, let me go to Ketrickan. It's important."
Nettle put her hands on my shoulders. She spoke slowly.
"B, our father is dead. It's hard to accept, and even I want to pretend it's not true. But he's dead. The fool told us all. He was trapped under a fallen timber, and he had bled heavily from a sword slash. He gave the fool his last strength, so he could save you. Our father could not have survived, let alone escaped."
"I wouldn't bet money on that," Riddle said grimly. "Not until I see his body. Come, we need to return to Buckkeep."
"To the healers?" Nettle asked doubtfully.
"To Lady Ketrickan," Riddle asserted. "Nettle, I know you must doubt this, but we must act as if it were true. We go to Ketrickan to ask what she thinks, and then we will make that other decision."
"To Ketrickan,"
she agreed reluctantly.
The old queen had not been well before she received the news of my father's death. On the way to her chambers, Nettle told me that some of the healers felt that news had been the tipping point for her.
"I dread this," Nettle said to Riddle.
"Might we not be bringing more distress into her life when she is already frail?"
"I do not think frail is the best word to apply to her. I think she is resigned, Nettle."
I had met with Ketrickan only that one awkward time since our return. She had been truly ill that day, and full of sadness. Her rooms had been curtained and close. This day we were admitted to a chamber where the windows stood ajar and the sunlight flooded the room. It was a simple room, sparsely furnished. There were chairs to sit on, and a low table, and little else. A vase almost as tall as me held an arrangement of reeds and rushes. That was all. The flagged floor was scrubbed and bare. Lady Ketrickan entered without ceremony shortly after a servant had shown us into the room and announced us. Her grey hair was braided and coiled about her head. She wore a long, straight, pale blue cotton robe, belted at her waist, and soft slippers. No jewellery did she wear, nor paint on her face. She could have been any old woman at a market. She regarded us with calm, blue eyes. The closest she came to a complaint was to say,
"This is a sudden visit?"
I found I was smiling at her, delighted. I almost wriggled. No, Night Eyes within me was delighted. I took a deep breath of the air, seeking her familiar scent.
"You still walk like a forest hunter, light of foot and steady-eyed," I told her.
"Bee!"
Nettle rebuked me. But Lady Ketrickan had only a puzzled smile for me.
"Please, sit,"
she bade us, and there was only a slight hitch of stiffness as she lowered herself to a seat.
"I am pleased to see all of you. Should I ring for refreshments for us?"
"Could there be ginger cakes?" I asked, again without knowing I would speak.
Ashamed, I hunched my head down between my shoulders and looked up at her. She raised her brows at me and with concern asked,
"Is there something going on here that I do not know about?"
Nettle looked hopelessly at Riddle. He kept silent. Nettle tried.
"Bee believes that her father is still alive. She believes that he has sent..."
"No," I had to interrupt. "No, he didn't send Night Eyes. He came on his own to me, and he asked me to come see Queen Ketrickan." The former queen was a fair-skinned woman. I did not think she could blanch whiter, but she did.
"I am no longer a queen," she reminded us.
"You are ever a queen to him, but more than that, you are always the hunter with the bow who fed everyone in the dark times. He was glad to be beside you, and glad to run ahead of you and drive game for you, and to offer you what comfort he could when you were sad."
Her lips trembled slightly. Then she said gently,
"Your father told you tales of our time in the mountains."
I folded my arms tightly across my chest and pulled my head up straight. I must not appear mad or hysterical.
"My lady, my father, Fitz, told me little of those times. Some, I know, but my wolf father tells me these things. He has words for you before he returns to my father. To die, I think."
"Can this be so? How did the wolf spirit linger? How can he come to you? And where is Fitz? Still in far-off Clarys and alive?"
Tragedy was in her eyes and drooped her mouth. She became an elderly woman. I waited for the answer to rise in me.
"No.
He is at the quarry in the mountains. You know the place well, where Verity carved his dragon. The scentless one believed him dead. He was mistaken. Fitz is there, but very weak and riddled with worms. He will die soon, and I will die with him. I wished to see you one last time, to let you know how dear you were to me."
I stopped speaking. I was surprised to find I was standing in front of Ketrickan, holding both her hands in mine.
The thought he conveyed to me now was only for me.
"Your mother was a good mate for Fitz. She gave him what he needed. But this is the woman I would have chosen for us."
A baffling thought, and not something to speak aloud. I pushed him back. He is very earnest that you believe this. He offered a memory, and I spoke it aloud. He remembers this. Sometimes, on the hunt, your hands would get cold and stiff. You would take off your mittens and gloves and warm your hands in the ruff of fur on his throat.
Lady Ketrickon flowed to her feet as if she were a slow fountain. She looked at Nettle. She was a silver-haired queen again.
We will need a tent and warm things, for even in summer the mountains are chill in the evening. You will take me there, and the fool, Lord Golden, whoever he is being today. Summon him as well, today.
Bring food, I said.
Then the wolf told us the last thing I wanted to know.
He is infected with parasites that are eating him. Day by day he dwindles, and I do not know how long I have been gone from him. It was strange to hear myself say, Ask B. She knows of such deaths. She has seen one.
He faded to the back of my mind as if exhausted. I could understand that. Never had I felt him so intense. But he left me standing in the circle of three adults staring down at me in wary belief. I doubled over, my hands over my mouth as I suddenly understood. The traitor's death. Vindelire had promised that to me. Had my father taken it for me? Ketrickon's hands on my shoulder were like a raptor's claws.
Stand up, she said sternly and forced me upright. You will tell me what this means.
Telling them of the messenger and her death was horrid. I wondered how much Beloved knew of it. The queen rang for refreshments. A servant brought tea and ginger cakes. I ate a cake with tears fresh on my cheeks and was astounded at how I savored the scent and taste of it while confessing a tale of bloody eyes, a butterfly cloak, and a midnight pyre. I had thought my father might have told Riddle or Nettle. Plainly, he had not. Nettle sank down and covered her face.
Oh, Dar, how could you?
I swallowed my bite of cake. The death is unstoppable, so the messenger said. It is the death they reserved for traitors. Slow, painful, and inevitable. I picked up another ginger cake. They watched me do it.
He likes them,
I said through my tears. I looked at the cake in my hands.
My father is dying horribly.
He can't stop that. But ginger still always tastes wonderful.
It does,
Ketrickon agreed. She put another one into my hands. I took a large bite of one, and for that moment the ginger and the sweetness was all there was. They were speaking over my head.
How could he not?
Riddle said, and reminded Nettle of a previous messenger that had vanished, perhaps murdered, during a Winterfest years before the butterfly cloak incident. That made Nettle uncover her face and knit her brows as she connected the two accounts. Ketrickon said nothing except,
It is what he would do, not that he would choose, but what he felt he must do at the time. Still, B, I am sorry that you had to serve him so, but we are wasting time. Riddle, go request all that we need. We will leave before sunset.
Nettle held up a hand. My lady, I implore prudence. She took a breath and glanced at me as if reluctant to speak in my hearing. Riddle winced for me as she said, I love my sister, but I think we should approach this sensibly. She has suffered a great deal. I was older than she is when Burrick died, and still I had vivid dreams of him coming home to us. I do not think she is lying. And here she met my eyes. But I fear she may be mistaken. Before we mount an expedition, let me send a coterie to see what the situation is. If they find him, they can bring him home. Remember that they will face a journey of days. They must take horses to the same leaning skill stone that Lady Shine showed us. I have ordered it righted and cleaned. As it has been used before, we consider it reliable. They will need calm and steady mounts for the passage. Once they have made the journey to the market circle, I believe there is still a journey to the quarry.
There is,
Lady Ketrickon admitted slowly.
At least we still have fine weather for it. It took us days in the winter. We had to hunt for our food, but this time we will carry provisions. We shall do better without the snow, and I recall the way.
My lady, when did you last go out riding? Her shoulders rounded and she looked at her curled hands.
But it is Fitz, she said softly.
And a coterie will reach him much faster than a full expedition. I will be sure that they take at least 2 skilled healers. In the event he is actually there, they will bring him home to us. Lady Ketrickon made a final effort.
I have a map I have created of the journey. It will speed us.
Both Riddle and Nettle kept silent. I stood still, not sure what was expected of me. Then it came to me. They meant to leave me behind. I will not be left. I will ride my own horse, and Purr will come with me.
I will fetch my map,
Lady Ketrickon said, as if that were a reply. She stood slowly, and the look in her blue eyes was cold and hard. She left the room, walking carefully upright. I must gather my things and find Purr, I said. But Nettle shook her head slowly. She looked very tired. B, you need to be sensible. So does Lady Ketrickon, and in a few moments, when she is calmer, I will speak to her again. There is no reason to risk her or you on a journey through the skill pillars. I will go myself. I will leave Hope with Riddle, and I will take a picked coterie with me. If Father is there, if this is not a terrible illusion you have, then we will bring him back here to Buckkeep Castle, where he can be treated and cured. Queen Eliania has brought in 2 new healers, one from her out islands and one who has trained with the priests of Saar in Jamalia. They both bring new ideas, new herbs, and, according to our healers, new successes. But I will not risk you in the skill pillars. You have already been endangered too often in your short life. It's time to be safe and stay here and be a child while you still can. Do you understand clearly what I am telling you? I am not taking you through the skill pillars with me. I met her gaze. I understand, I said quietly. Repeat it. I drew a frustrated breath. You will not be taking me to Dar in the quarry through the skill pillars with you, even though he is probably dying. She folded her lips and Riddle rolled his eyes at me. Then, exactly, she said. She sighed. Now, off with you. Go about your regular duties, and please speak of this to no one. I myself will inform King Dutiful. Oh, and as to what we were trying to discuss earlier, of course you may visit Thick, but at a proper time of day and with one of his attendants there to exercise the restraint that Thick has been lacking. I will arrange that today. You must be careful of him. He is prone to be excitable and sometimes difficult. And the discussion we were to have about your skill training must wait until I return. We may need to damp your ability until you are able to exercise more caution with it. I had not found him difficult. I did not say that. Instead, I curtsied to my sister. As I turned, she spoke again. B, I know you think me strict and perhaps cold, but we are sisters, and I so nearly lost you. You cannot imagine how helpless I felt all through my pregnancy, how I wondered if my baby would ever know you, how Riddle tormented himself that he had not remained with you. We have you back. We have lost our father. I will not lose you. I bobbed a nod to that, turned, and quietly left the chamber. I shut the door behind me. Then I ran as swiftly as I could through the corridors. First, to find Beloved. He could get us through a skill pillar. And he owed me some answers. How was it he had told me my father was dead, and now I learned he was not dead, but dying? My anger with him burned hotter, but I knew I would need him. Then I'd find Purr. Nettle had not said I could not go, only that she would not take me. I was thankful I was still dressed for riding. Trousers were much better for hiking than my ridiculous skirts. My mind raced. Could Beloved pretend that we were going on a picnic and procure food for us? Her could get horses from the stable. We'd need an extra one to bring my father home.
You go to say goodbye, not to bring him home. Food and bedding and something for a shelter are what you should take him. It will help him sustain his life long enough to finish his task.
I am not going to accept his death. Not again.
A page hurried past me, then turned and came back to me. Are you well, Lady B? I realized that tears were running down my face and dripping from my chin. I wiped them hastily. Dust in my eyes from my ride. Thank you for your concern. Have you seen Lord Chance this morning?
I saw him ascending the stairs to the Queen's garden, the one on the rooftop of the... Thank you. I know where that is.
I changed direction and hurried away from him. But in two steps he followed me and seized me by the arm. I spun on him in a fury, shocked to be handled so. But the page, suddenly, was Spark.
What is it? What's happened?
I must see Lord Chance now.
She folded her lips. Change your expression, she hissed at me.
Anyone who sees you will know you are defiant. Smile, as if we are going on a pleasant errand, and hurry, but do not run. Oi will be right behind you.
I recovered from my shock. I wiped my face on my sleeve and stitched a smile onto my mouth. I did as she suggested. The corridors had never seemed so long. I hated the steep climb up the tower steps. Twice I stopped to breathe. I hoped he was still there. The outer door to the tower rooftop was heavy, built to withstand both the winds and the heavy snows of winter. Spark had her picks out. I flashed my key at her, and she exclaimed in surprise. Together, we shoved the door open and stepped out into a pleasant day. High, thin clouds were scraped across a blue sky. Up here, the wind was cooler. I did not immediately see Lord Chance. The large pots full of blooming plants and statues seemed too placid and calm a place for my boiling thoughts. I followed the tiled walkway and at the end saw Beloved standing with his back toward me. He was looking landward.
Lord Chance!
I hailed him. He turned to me, and a hesitant smile dawned.
Well, I cannot recall that you have ever sought my company before, B. Thrice welcome.
His voice was full of warmth and hope. Then he saw Spark behind me, and his expression became one of alarm.
What has happened?
I had thought I could be calm. I could not.
How could you tell me my father was dead? How could you leave him? How could you leave him? How could you not go back for him?
B!
Spark rebuked me, but I ignored her. My words tore the smile from Beloved's face. He looked ill and beaten. He tried for a breath, failed, and tried again.
B! Fitz is dead. You yourself said you felt that he was gone.
He clutched his gloved hand in his bared one.
I felt that link break. He died. I felt it.
His face was full of misery and shock.
He left me,
he said forlornly, and my fury soared.
He's not dead!
I bit off every word.
Night Eyes says he is at the quarry, dying, riddled with parasites, just as the pale messenger died. It's a horrible way to go. You know it. They call it the traitor's death, delivered by a dart, and you left him to it.
Spark gasped.
They shot darts at us before the explosion. B sent them running, and he brushed a dart from his jerkin.
Hope and horror vied for possession of Beloved's features.
He cannot be alive, he declared,
but oh, how he longed to believe my father lived. I told Nettle and Riddle. We went to see Lady Ketrickon. Nettle is planning to send a coterie through to see if it's real. She says they will bring Fitz back. But Night Eye says he is dying, even if my father doesn't believe it. The wolf says he should stay at the quarry and carve a dragon. He says they should not bring him back here.
Carve a dragon?
Spark looked very confused. I heard the scuff of steps and turned to see Lant and Purr. Purr burst out,
Your father lives!
At the same moment that Lant exclaimed,
Thank Eda that we found you!
But most shocking of all was when Motley swooped in to land on Purr's shoulder and shout,
Fitz! Fitz! The quarry! The quarry!
We are leaving before nightfall,
Beloved announced. He looked out over the parapet and abruptly announced,
"Ketrikan goes with us."
"And how will we travel?"
Spark asked. She sounded sick.
"As you and I did before, from the Dungeon Stone to Aslevyol, from Aslevyol to the Market Circle, thence on foot to the Skillstone Quarry. Spark, I recall how it hurt you last time. You need not come."
"We have no dragon's blood to help you make the journey."
"I have the silver on my fingers. I believe I can do it. Any who fear the journey need not come."
"Of course I will go with you."
She sounded bitterly defeated as she said it.
I spoke up. "If he can open the stone, I know how to give skill strength, and I can draw it from Per if need be."
Per gave a grim-faced nod. Lant had not spoken, but there was a sick determination on his face. Spark crossed her arms on her chest.
"Ketrikan is elderly, and her joints give her much pain. She will never be able to keep up."
"Oh, you do not know her as I do," Beloved said grimly. "She will make that journey. I will not leave her behind."
Spark threw her hands in the air.
"This is mad, and the end of my occupation here at Bookkeep. We are all risking our lives and our sanity."
She sounded angry as she rounded on Per and Lant.
"Why are you still standing here? Fetch all that is needful. Lord Chance, you must be the one to propose this to Ketrikan. I will not."
She shifted her attention to me.
"You, go about your schedule as if nothing is happening, even to disrobing for bed tonight. Wait until we come to fetch you."
Chapter 48. Time.
There is a cage made of crawling, squirming things. Inside is something that used to be a man. A black and white rat looks at him, and then giggles, and turns handsprings as it abandons him. I make no illustration for this dream. It felt as if it would be true, and I would witness it.
Dream Journal of B. Farseer.
"Anything a bear can eat, a man can eat too."
Burrick told me that long ago, after I died in Regal's dungeon, and before I had found myself as a human again. He was looking guardedly at a leaf-buried bear kill we had stumbled across on one of my supervised walks. He had very hastily cut some chunks from the decomposing fawn, and then we had left the bear's cache quickly. Aged meat is far more tender than a fresh kill. I remembered that meat fondly, but he was correct in all aspects of what he had said. A man can eat grubs from under a rotted log, or a frog, tender roots and the young shoots of water grasses. Even pond scum can thicken a soup, if one has something to cook soup in. Pond algae can be eaten by the handful, along with watercress, and the roots of cattails can be roasted in a low fire. Sometimes I wondered if Verity had subsisted in the same way before Ketrikan and I had arrived at the quarry to hunt real food for him. The morning after my wolf left me, I woke and rubbed my sandy eyes. As I sat up, a terrible coughing spell took me. When I could gasp in a breath, I wiped my mouth on the back of my hand. It left a smear of blood. I looked at it, and a sad, sick certainty rose in me. Then a terrible feeling in my mouth. Not pain. I would have preferred pain. I leaned forward and spat on the ground in front of me. Blood and saliva, and several pale, squirming things, no thicker than a bowstring, no longer than a finger joint. Oh. I went to the pond, sucked in water, sloshed it through my mouth, and spat on the ground. Another one. Small bits of information tumbled and joined in my mind. An idea threatened me. The pale messenger that B and I had burned. I mulled over that memory, and then denied it. Night Eyes had insisted that I had worms. I did. That was all. I crouched down to study the creature that had lived inside me. It was a kind I had not seen before, in man or beast. But that was all it was. Just a worm. I wondered if I could be lucky enough to find wild garlic or orange root growing nearby. Both were good for clearing parasites from the body. But a more practical plan would be to begin my journey to the ancient market and go from there to Buck. There would be healers there. I scooped up more water in my hands and rubbed my face. When I dropped my hands, they were tinged pink. I touched my nostrils and looked at my fingers. No. I touched my fingertips to my eyes. They came away red, and with the blood on my fingertips came a sickening certainty. The messenger had wept blood. She had said the worms the servants had infected her with were eating her eyes, that she could scarcely see any more. I lifted my eyes and looked about me. I could still see. But for how long? I had two tasks every day that I performed faithfully. I gathered more firewood, and I went to the water to drink. I longed to go to the creek to fish, but my strength was failing me. Nosebleeds were a daily occurrence now, and my back and thighs were covered with small, itching sores. The only parts of my legs that were free of the sores were where the silver had splashed me. Too late, I had come to agree with the wolf. I wished he would come to me so that I could tell him so. By the third day of his absence, the reduction in my stamina was something I could no longer argue with. My wolf was gone, and I knew I was never going home again. I'd made several attempts to skill, and failed at all of them. Perhaps it was the silver on my body, or my general weakness, or the presence of so much skill stone around me. The reason didn't matter. I was alone, and I had one last task to do. I had to prepare a stone for us, and hope that the wolf would return to share it with me. Once Night Eyes had begun the carving with my handprint, it did not occur to me that it would be anything other than a wolf. Daily I toiled on our dragon, my silver hand stroking the stone as I gave it the memories Night Eyes and I shared. I was surprised to see that the wolf emerging from the stone stood with teeth bared and hackles raised. Were the two of us together truly so fierce of visage? Yet even as I poured in memories of hunts and shared kills, of wild romps in the snow and mice caught in an old hut, of porcupine quills pulled and his teeth pressing hard against my back as he sheared off an arrow shaft, I knew that I did not have enough to fill this stone flesh. I knew that when it came time to draw my last breath, I would lean on this cold creature and pass into him, and remain here, mired in stone, just as Girl on a Dragon had stood for so many decades of years. I should have listened to him. I should have. If Night Eyes had been with me still, there might have been more of us to put into the wolf dragon. He had only the colors of the stone, and that bothered me. Before I died, I wanted to once more look into those wise eyes. I wanted, a last time, to see his glance catch the firelight and gleam green and startling. I began to sleep with my back against him, as we used to do. Not that the stone gave me any warmth, but in the hope that my dreams might permeate it and help the wolf emerge more swiftly. I woke in the night. There are two kinds of sleep when one is weak and cold. One is the kind where one pretends to sleep as one shivers and shifts and tries to clutch body warmth. I had wrapped my stolen cloak around me, covering my head to keep the gnats from my ears and eyes. Insects do love a dying animal. Then I had fallen into the second kind of sleep, the heavy sleep of exhaustion that cold and pain cannot break. That sleep, I think, is the precursor to death. Thus I came out of it slowly and reluctantly, unsure of where dream gave way to reality. Voices, scuffing footsteps. I struggled to untangle my head from its wrapping. I didn't stand up, but I opened my eyes and blinked dully at the startling yellow glare of a swinging lantern coming toward me. "This way, I think," someone said. "We should make a camp and continue in the morning. I can see nothing here."
"We are close. I know we are so close. B, cannot you skill to him? He said he felt you skill once."
"This stone? No, I have no training. You know I have no training."
The light was so bright I could see nothing else. Then I made out shadows and silhouettes. People,
carrying a lantern, and packs. I feebly pushed my wit toward them.
"Fitz!"
someone shouted, and I realized I'd heard that querying call before in my sleep, and it had woken me, and more, that I knew the voice.
"Over here!"
I called, but my voice was thin in a dry throat. The wolf hit me with an almost physical impact. He was a jolt to my dwindling body, almost like an infusion of skill strength.
"Oh, my brother, I could not find you to return to you. I feared we were too late. I feared you had entered the stone without me."
"I am here."
"Look, embers of a fire. He's there. Fitz, Fitz!"
"Don't touch me,"
I cried out and clutched my silver hand to my chest. They came at me at a run, shapes emerging out of the twilight. The fool reached me first, but as the firelight illuminated him, he halted an arm's length away and stared at me, his mouth hanging ajar. I looked back at him and waited.
"Oh, Fitz," the fool cried. "What did you do to yourself?"
"No worse than what you have done. Twice." I managed a twisted smile. "I did not choose this," I added feebly.
"Far worse than anything I've ever done," he declared.
His gaze wandered over me, lingering on the silvered side of my face. His expression was more telling than any mirror.
"How could you do this? Why?"
"I didn't. It happened. The container of silver, the fire brick in my bag." I held up a helpless silvered hand.
"Tar!"
B shrieked furiously, and my watering eyes showed me Purr with his arms wrapped about my younger daughter, holding her back. She kicked and struggled, baring her teeth. Abruptly, Purr said to her,
"B, you are not that foolish,"
and let her go. She did not rush to me. She came in small steps, studying me carefully. Then she set her small hands onto my arm, touching flesh to flesh, with no silver between us. I could suddenly draw a deeper breath. Hope flowed in me. I could live. I could go home. Then I realized what she was doing.
"B, no!"
I rebuked her and pulled my arm free of her grip.
"You do not skill strength to me."
But she had.
"I have strength to spare,"
she pleaded. I shook my head. "B, all of you, you cannot touch me now. I am carving my dragon, our dragon, for Night Eyes and me. Everything I have I must put into it, and I must not pull you and your strength in." The fool set his hands, one gloved, on Bee's shoulders. He drew her back gently, but I saw her stiffen with resentment and, for a moment, flash her teeth at his touch. Lant and Purr were staring at my silvered face in something between horror and pity. The fool spoke.
"Explanations can wait after we have built up the fire and made hot tea and soup for Fitz. There are blankets in the big pack."
He lifted his voice to a shout.
"Spark, over here!"
he cried, and I glimpsed another bobbing lantern. Then they were all unshouldering their packs, and he spoke on of wondrous things, of hot tea with honey and smoked meat and blankets, while the wolf capered joyously inside me. I closed my eyes. When I opened them again, other people had approached and were busying themselves with camp tasks. I sat quietly while Bee told me of their journey home and described the shape of her life at Buckkeep Castle. The fool orbited us at a distance, sometimes pausing to listen to some detail of Bee's recitation, but mostly engaged in directing Lant and Purr in setting up a shelter and sorting supplies from the packs. I leaned with my back on my partially carved wolf and tried to take pleasure in what I knew was actually farewell. But Motley with her silver beak came and perched on my stone wolf. She cocked her head and said nothing, but I thought she looked at me sadly. She wetted her silver beak on the stone, once, twice, and I felt something go into the wolf. The memory of a kind shepherd, a man who had taken in a freak nestling. Then she hopped into the air to land
on the firewood pile. I was given a thick wool blanket, and Purr built up my fire recklessly large, and Lant fetched water for a cooking pot and a kettle. "Eat this," Spark said, and set wrapped food before me. I was surprised that she was there, but the smell of the food drove even a greeting out of my thoughts. I opened the sticky cloth. It was cold bacon, thick with grease, wrapped in a thick cut of dark bread. Lant uncorked a bottle of wine and set it within my reach. They moved about me as if I were a rabid dog that might lunge and bite, avoiding my touch as they offered me every physical comfort. I filled my belly with bread and meat and washed down the immense, half-chewed bites I took with the heady red wine. Spark was brewing tea in a fat kettle. Lant stirred a pot of simmering water, enriched with chunks of dried beef and carrots and potatoes. I could smell it, and a deep wave of hunger left me shaking. I hugged myself against it.
"Fitz, are you in pain?"
It was the fool asking that, in a voice fraught with guilt. "Of course I am," I said. "They are eating me, the little bastards. They eat me, and my body rebuilds itself, and they eat me afresh. I almost think it is worse after I have eaten."
"I will see to that," a woman said. "I have learned a great deal about herbs for pain, and I brought what I thought best would serve."
I looked again, and it was Ketrickan. I felt a boyish lurch of joy inside me. My queen. Oh, Night Eyes. "Ketrickan, I did not see you there."
"You never did," she said,
and smiled sadly. Then she called to Spark, asking for a little kettle from her pack and the blue roll of herb bundles.
"Da, tomorrow you will feel better,"
Bee told me.
"We will begin the journey back to the market circle, and from there we can take you home. Nettle says that there are new healers at Buckkeep from far-off places with new ideas."
"So Nettle sent you to bring me home?" I suddenly realized how wrong this all was. Was this a dying man's illusion? I looked into the darkness. "She sent no coterie here?" An uncomfortable expression passed over Bee's face.
"I left her a note," she said quietly.
Then at my shock, she added,
"She wasn't going to let me come. She was going to send a coterie after you to bring you home."
"Bee, I am not going to go home. I'm going to finish here." She reached out to take my hand, and I tucked it under my other arm. "No, Bee." She lifted her hands and covered her face. I looked over her head at the fool hovering at the edge of our circle. I tried to find some comforting words. "You will have to trust me that this is a better end than I would face if I came home, and this is the ending I choose for myself. My decision. For me." The fool stared at me and then stepped back out of the firelight. Ketrickan came, bearing a small steaming kettle and a thick pottery mug. She offered me the mug, and I held it as she poured her brew into it. Her hands shook slightly. I sipped at the tea and tasted karimi and valerian for pain, and enlivening herbs and ginger, all sweetened with honey. It worked swiftly. The pains eased. It was as if I poured life back into my body.
"Tomorrow you will be strong enough, and we will take you back to Buckkeep and the healers there,"
Ketrickan offered hopefully. I smiled at her as she sat down beside my fire. Yes, it would be a long farewell. "Ketrickan, you have been here before. We both know how this ends. You see my wolf at my back. I will finish him, and now that Night Eyes is with me again, it will go more swiftly." I reached behind me to set my hand on his paw. I felt each toe, the space between them, and recalled how his claws had been set. I stroked the polished smoothness of one, and almost expected him to twitch his foot away in annoyance, as he always had.
"You always teased me when I was trying to sleep, barely touching the hairs between my toes. It tickled unbearably."
I let that shared memory soak into the stone. For a time, I was alone with him. I heard Ketrickon retrieve the mug and her quiet steps as she walked away.